You ever feel like somebody's out to get you? Like they're just not treating you right? Folks are just taking advantage of you over and over and over. You ever feel like you're just being oppressed? Well, what are you supposed to do? How are we as Christians supposed to act when we feel like we're being oppressed? How are we not supposed to act? Because that's just as important as how we're supposed to act. We don't want to do something we shouldn't, but we need to make sure that we're doing the right things too. So that's what we're going to look at today. In James 5, we find instruction for those who are being oppressed. We spoke last week of the way that folks were having their wages kept back and being mistreated and all of the things that happened. And he starts out with therefore in our reading today that Andy just read for us from James 5, 7 down through 12. Therefore, because there are oppressors in the world, how are we supposed to handle that? There are people who take advantage of other people. I know I've had it in my life many times, and I'm sure you have too. I saw a commercial on television where, I think it was for UPS, I was watching it and thinking about this lesson at the same time, and an older gentleman was talking to a young man sitting there and complimenting him on thinking about logistics and thinking about this and that and the other, and he said, "Who thought of that?" And the young man smiled real big and said, "I did." And the older gentleman reached out and patted him on the shoulder and said, "We did." In other words, he's going to take credit for this guy's idea. And the young man said, I understand. You're going to take my credit. But that's okay. How should we act when such things as that happen? Well, I think we can find some pretty good principles in our reading today. What we should do and what we shouldn't do. The behavior of those being oppressed in Jesus' day is one I think is set there before us as one that we need to be following. We need to understand how we ought to act. If we're going to present Christianity to the world in a proper light, I believe when we truly live a Christian life, folks are so astonished. They say, "What? How can you live like that? How can you be that kind of a person? How can you allow those things to happen?" Look in the fourth and fifth verses of this chapter. It said, "Indeed, the wages of the labor who mowed your fields that you kept back by fraud cry out. And the cries of the reaper have reached the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. You've lived on the earth in pleasure and luxury, and you've fattened your hearts in the days of slaughter." He said, there are folks that are taking advantage of you, and you're being treated unjustly. But folks, they didn't resist. There wasn't a revolt. There wasn't a strike. They simply did not resist. They cried out to the Lord, and we'll get back to that point in just a moment. You know, when you think about not resisting, that's very consistent with what Jesus taught us in Luke, the 6th chapter, verse number 27. Jesus said, "I say to you who hear, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, and pray for those who despitefully use you. To him who strikes you on one cheek, offer the other also. And from him who takes away your cloak, do not hold your tunic either. Give to everyone who asks of you, and from him who takes away your goods, do not ask them back." Jesus says, don't resist. If folks are going to oppress you, they're going to be answered sooner or later. You need to not resist. That's pretty much what Paul said in Romans, the 12th chapter, where he tells us the same kind of a concept, the same kind of an idea. Starting in verse number 19, he said, "Beloved," Romans 12:19, "do not avenge yourselves, but rather give peace a place to wrath. For it's written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord.' Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. For in doing so, you'll heap coals of fire on his head. Do not overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." We often have a problem with that because it's really kind of contrary to human nature. And it's contrary to human wisdom. You know, human nature says we can react in justifiable anger. And we can strike back if somebody hit us. Human wisdom says we need to stand up for our rights. That's not what either Jesus or Paul said. Neither one. But look also what Peter says in 1 Peter the 2nd chapter, starting with verse 18. He says, "Servants, be submissive to your masters, with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the harsh." 1 Peter 2 and verse 18. "This is commendable, if because of conscience toward God one endures grief, suffering wrongly. For what credit is it if you're beaten for your faults and you take it patiently? But if you do good and suffer and you take it patiently, this is commendable before God. For this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that we should follow in his steps, who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth, who when he was reviled did not revile in return when he suffered. He did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously." Jesus didn't stand up for his rights. He didn't stand up in justifiable anger. He trusted the one who's going to judge righteously. Now, that not resisting, I think, is based on two things. One, having an awareness that God is coming to judge. Let's look back in our text in James 5, verses 8 and 9. It said, "You also be patient, establish your heart, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Do not grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be consumed or condemned. Behold, the judge standeth at the door." An awareness of that judge standing at the door, an awareness of that judge who's coming to judge, either on the final day of judgment when he comes back to this and there's the end of all, or at the end of our death. The judgment will take place, but that takes a second part of it. And that's a willingness to let him be our judge. You know, there is a sense of feeling good when you get revenge. When you stand up and you fight for it and you've been mistreated and you feel good. But you know, sin is often pleasurable for a moment. Look in Luke the 18th chapter, starting with verse number 7. "Shall not God avenge his own elect who cry out day and night to him, though he bears long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he really find faith on earth?" That's a powerful statement. I don't want you to take revenge. Is there going to be anybody that trusts me? Is there going to be anyone who's faithful to that saying when I come back? Or are we all going to give in and stand up and fight? We're not supposed to resist. That's the first thing about how we ought to act when we're being oppressed. The second thing, back in our text, be patient. "Therefore be patient, brethren." The word used here, by the way, is different than the one found earlier in this epistle. In the first chapter, in verse number 1, the word for patience, the concept that in verse number 3, the testing of your faith produces patience, that's hupomonen in the original. That means to bear up under trials. It has to do with being patient in reference to things and circumstances. We need to stand up under problems that come into our life, health problems, financial problems, all of those kind of things. That's hupomonen. That's the one that he says in verse number 3, here, markudothumai, a little tougher word to say, is the word that's used. And it means patience in reference to people. Boy, don't we have a struggle with that one. Don't we have a problem with being patient with people? It's a whole lot easier to bear up under patience with a problem, with a thing. But when it's somebody else that's just rubbing at us and digging at us and taking from us and hurting us, and we're supposed to be patient. But God doesn't just tell us to do it. He gives us 3 examples, which tells me, look, I know this is going to be a problem, so let me give you some examples of what you're supposed to do. First, he talks about the farmer. Sandy will tell you, I'm not a good farmer. I'm not even a good gardener. See, I don't mind getting out and working the soil and getting it ready and putting the plants in the ground, but I want to go out the next day and pick the tomato, harvest the beans and eat them. But James tells us you got to wait for the early rain and then the latter rain. And I struggle with this patience with things a lot. I work on it, but I struggle with it. He not only talks about the farmer in the 7th verse having patience, when he drops down to the 10th verse, he talks about the prophets and how they came and they spoke the word of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience. He says, indeed, we could count them blessed who endure. They preached and nobody listened, and they preached and nobody listened, and they preached some more and they got thrown in jail, and they got out and they preached some more and they got stoned, and another one rose up and preached some more and nobody listened, and they preached some more and nobody listened. That's the kind of patience we need to have with people. With people. Think about Job. Look in verse number 11. He said, you've heard of the perseverance of Job and seen the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful. We think we have medical problems. And somebody asked me down at the VA, what kind of medical problems do you have? And I said, how much time you got? And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, you can start out. We'll just start at the top. I can't hear. I can't see. My eyes have had surgery 2 times. I got a pacemaker, defibrillator, cardiomyopathy, congestive heart failure. And I said, that's just got down to here. You want me to stop? He said, yeah, I understand. Job had lost all his health, boils from top to bottom, lost his children, lost his wealth, in effect lost his wife. She was fighting against him. And he remained faithful to God. He remained faithful to God. Each one of these examples, folks, teach us to trust in the Lord. Teach us that He will eventually reward our trust. Teach us to be steadfast in our service to Him in the meantime. We can't just sit down over in the corner and curl up and say, oh, poor me. Nobody's got the problems I have. Oh, yeah, they do. Oh, yeah, they do. And God knows how much strength you have to handle them anyway. So we need to be patient. Now going back to our text, he says, you be patient in verse number 8 and establish your hearts. Establish your hearts. The word that's translated there has the idea of to fix something, to make it fast, to strengthen it. Steve and I were putting a swing together on our back patio. And that's a chore, wasn't it, Steve? That thing was big box, lots and lots of parts. We got it all done and we looked at it. Forgot to tighten a couple screws. And then there was a nut over here that we didn't tighten. We had to go through and check everything and make it strong. We had to establish it. We had to, in the context here, establish your heart in a certain way. Establish your heart to be patient and not resist. In other words, God knows that's not the human way to do it. That's the Christian way to do it. Romans 15, verse number 4, tells us that patience and strength to not resist is something that needs to be developed. It's something we need to learn. You know, it fascinates me how many young people today are writing in print and not in cursive. Just never learned. Teachers accept print. I think by the time I was in the second grade, that was, teacher just crumble the paper up and throw it in the trash. Wouldn't even grade it. Wouldn't even look at it. You realize if you can't read cursive, you can't read the Constitution, you can't read the Declaration of Independence, you can't read any of our documents. You don't know who you are, where you are, or what you are. You have to learn. Now, knowing Zach, he probably was born with the ability to program computers. I don't know, but anybody else that did it had to learn how to do it. Had to go to school, had to learn the programming languages. Just like I had to learn Greek. Wished I'd learned Hebrew. And I learned that if you don't use it, you lose it. And it's the same way with being patient and establishing your heart to not resist. You got to work on it. Constantly be working on it. And you know what the fourth thing is in this context? Verse number 9, do not grumble. Don't complain. You know, when other people oppress us, when you have a bad day at work, when things don't go right at the store and you think that you got overcharged. When you walk up and you can see the time still on the meter, but it goes click and the lady's sitting there writing out a ticket. You feel like you're being oppressed and things are just not going right. What do we usually do? We walk in the house and jump all over our mate. I know it used to be in our house when I was growing up. My sister and I would know when my dad had a bad day at work. He worked in a steel mill. Rough bunch of guys worked there. And when he didn't have a good day, man, we tiptoed around him. We didn't ask him for anything. We talked to Mom. And when we walked in the house from school, if she'd had a bad day, she had one of those old washing machines, you know, that used to grind your clothes up every once in a while to get caught in the wringer. And I remember one day she had brand new blouse, wore it one time, washed it, and it got ate up by the washing machine. Oh, she loved that blouse. We stayed away from her about 3 days. But aren't we all like that? Don't we grumble? We vent our frustrations on those that are closest and dearest to us? Folks, we should not. And we have a good reason not to. Look at the rest of the text. Do not grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. God considers grumbling a very serious crime. Look in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 5, talking about those that came out of Egypt with Moses. It said, now, with most of them, God was not well pleased. Their bodies were scattered. Now, these things happen for our to the intent that we should not lust after evil things. They also lusted. Did not become idolaters as some of them. It's written the people rose or sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Let's not commit sexual immorality as some of them did. And in one day, 23,000 fell. Let's not tempt Christ as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. Nor complain as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. You want to be in that party? The ones that lusted and complained and became idolaters? God says if you're a complainer, you're just like them. He said these things in verse 11 happened to them as an example, and they're written for our admonition on whom the end of the ages have come. We're going to be condemned if we're grumbling and grouchy and venting our frustration on somebody else. He says, you can't do that. You can't do that. The same Lord who's going to judge the oppressor is going to judge the grumbler. I don't want to be in either party. And I'm pretty sure you don't either. But then he goes on to say, in verse number 12, but above all, my brethren, do not swear, either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, lest you fall into judgment. In other words, don't make rash promises. Lord, if you get us through this terrible financial strait we're in, we're going to be at church every Sunday. Lord, if you help me get through this surgery, I'll be faithful as I can be. I will not do any kind of... Don't say that. Don't say that. God knows you don't mean it. He used to talk about foxhole conversions in a war situation. And I'm sure it's still going on over in Iraq and Afghanistan. Guys get in a really tough situation and, Lord, you get me through this and I'll be yours forever. Don't make those kind of flippant oaths. Well, let me just show you how God feels about that. Go to the book of Ecclesiastes. Go to Ecclesiastes and I'm going to the 5th chapter and starting with verse 1. Ecclesiastes 5:1. Walk prudently when you go to the house of God. Draw near to hear rather than to give the sacrifice of fools. For they do not know that they do evil. Do not be rash with your mouth, and let not your heart utter anything hastily before God. For God is in heaven, and you upon earth. Therefore let your words be few, for a dream comes through much activity, and a fool's voice is known by his many words. When you make a vow to God, do not delay to pay it, for he has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you vowed. Better not to vow than to vow and not pay. In Jesus' day, the writers tell us, the Jewish writers tell us, that it was a very common thing to make flippant oaths. In God's name, I'll do this. They made a distinction. They wouldn't say, in God's name, I'll do this. They'll say, by the temple, I'll do this. Or by the holy city of Jerusalem, I'll do this. By my mother's grave, I'll do this. And they didn't consider those binding at all. Only thing that was binding is if they'd have done like I did at first. And I said, in God's name, I'll do this. Now that was a binding oath. Everything else, every other flippant oath, didn't mean anything. Jesus and James here both condemn that kind of an oath and basically tell us there is no distinction. If you give your word, you've given your word. If you say you're going to do something, you swear you're going to do it, then do it. The sixth thing is to pray. Look in the fifth chapter in verse number 13. It says, "Is there any among you suffering? Let him pray." Let him pray. That's what Christians were doing in, we read it, the fifth chapter in verse number 4, when they were crying out to the Lord of Sabaoth. They were praying. And when we pray, God hears. Isn't that what verse number 4 said? "Indeed, the wages of the labor who mowed down your fields and you kept back there by fraud, cry out and listen close. And the cries of the reapers have reached the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth." We can know when we pray, God hears. And God will avenge His righteous ones. Verses 7 and 8. He's at the door. The judge is standing at the door. God will avenge. Now, it may not come when we want it. You know, we tend to not be patient. We tend to want it right now. The Lord may bear long with us. But the Lord will avenge. And we need to trust that. Therefore, when we're being oppressed, we need to, number one, not resist. Number two, be patient. Number three, establish your heart. Number four, don't swear. Number five, pray. When we react this way, we're following the example of Jesus. We're following the examples of the early disciples, not the example of the world. We're not to be worldly people. We're to be Christians. These early disciples and Jesus committed themselves to the one who judges righteously. Now, with a righteous God on our side, and we know that He's on our side, it should be a whole lot easier to endure. A whole lot easier to endure those who oppress us. So I ask the question, is the righteous God on your side? Or maybe a better way to ask that question, are you on God's side? Are you living a faithful life? Are you living an obedient life? Are you doing the things God would have you to do the way God would have you to do them? Or are you living your life according to what the world tells us? That's a question we, everyone, need to answer this morning. And we need to know, we need to be honest about it. Because we're going to have to answer it on the judgment day. Have you lived your life faithfully? Can we help? Do you need immersed for the forgiveness of your sins? Do you need to come back to the Father that loves you? The one who will be your righteous judge? Won't you come right now while we stand and while we sing?